Yeah, that unknown I used to be really afraid of. I used to be afraid of not knowing what to expect, not knowing how to prepare or plan. And I kind of just put my hands up when I started traveling. I'm just like, okay, wherever it leads me, I'm okay with. And I'll adjust. It's almost like trusting yourself to, or trusting myself to adapt and transition.
Hello, and welcome to the Venture Life Podcast, where we share the stories of people pursuing their passions and the ups and downs that come along the way. I'm your host, Riley McGee, and this is episode number 16 with Tara Danino. If you've listened to this podcast before, then, well, you know that we explore ideas like what it means to be successful or how to live life to the fullest. And you'd also know that I deeply appreciate you taking the time to give the show a rating and review on iTunes. But if you're brand new to the show, then you're in for a real treat because Tara's story is both inspiring and educational, and potentially terrifying if you're not big on taking risks. But we talk about how she went from playing pool nearly every night of the week, that is on a pool table, the game pool, with the hopes of perhaps even playing professionally, to contemplating a move to an entirely different country with no plans for a return flight back home. In that time span, we cover relationship crossroads, how to manage the logistics of traveling by yourself, pushing against the American dream, safety concerns as a female, and even what you'll probably be thinking about when you're 80 years old. So if you enjoyed today's episode, then please share it with a friend. Stories like this one only go as far as you're willing to spread them, so I appreciate your help. But without further ado, here is Tara Danino. Tara, welcome to the Venture Life Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on. I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was a post that I remember seeing. You know, I follow you on social media, and I saw a post that you had, and there was just something in the conversation that just sparked. I was like, oh, we got to talk. We got to get you on the show.
I do remember that. I don't remember which post it was about. But I definitely like prompting different, thought-provoking things for people to just think about on social media. You know, maybe the difference between lust versus love. Like, I just like making people think. So it was probably one of those.
I think the one that came to mind was about pool and like making a career out of being a pool player.
I do remember that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was a post about pool being like a beautiful game played by ugly people, and being a female pool player in a very male dominated world was very, very difficult. I found it very discouraging, and you know, I often found that people cared more about their own game or skill or their own competition more than they cared about being a good person or their character. And that to me was too conflicting. It just conflicted with my morals. So I ended up sort of phasing out a little bit of the pool world. Not to say I don't love the game and I always will. It's just something I struggled to maintain.
Well, I guess let's dive into that, because I'm glad you brought that up, because you've described yourself as a mental health counselor, a pool player, a solo traveler, getting ready for your next adventure, I think is to put it in your words, which was a one-way ticket to Prague, I think it was. Yeah. But before we even get to that part of the conversation, I want to better understand what you just brought up with playing pool, because, you know, to put this out on the table, you're not just a pool player. You were a competitive pool player. You were in tournaments and leagues, and you play sometimes up to like five nights a week. And that's so... Who is this alter ego late night shark, Tara? Where did she come from?
Well, it all kind of started when I went to grad school in Massachusetts. I ended up living by myself in a town next to the town where my college was. And I didn't know anybody. I was living by myself. I didn't know anybody. So I ended up going to a bar nearby. It was like 10 seconds from my apartment, and there was a pool table there. So I started teaching myself. That's how I made friends. That's how I socialize. I would just kind of jump on the table and play. And then it started to snowball. I started joining League and I really loved it. And then I ended up moving back home to Long Island, where I really dove in, because New York, Long Island is like kind of the mecca for pool players. You know, I know a lot of like pros, and I know a lot of professional pool players come through that area. So I was like around a lot of, you know, very highly skilled players. So it ended up turning into like a 5 to 7 night a week thing. And it was just, I totally immersed myself in it.
It almost sounds like you just kind of stumbled into it. I don't know if it was like a conscious decision.
Yeah, I definitely stumbled into it. And, you know, I was even like late to the game, because a lot of people start at a young age. They say their fathers taught them, they grew up with a pool table, what have you. And I was definitely late to the game. But, you know, I found that a lot of people wanted to help me and help develop my game. They saw my passion for it. And so I was putting in a lot of hours on the table.
I'm assuming, though, that you enjoyed the hours that you were putting in.
I did. I mean, you know, there would be some times I would go to the pool hall, practice the same shot over and over and over again, learn position, teach myself all these intricacies. There's so many facets to the game that are just so intricate that you need to put in that time. And, you know, I would be a student of the game, too. I would study it. I would watch videos, read books. And it ended up, like, really consuming my life for probably the last couple of years.
Wow. But so then you said, though, that it's kind of been phasing out as of late. And, I mean, I know you kind of mentioned that sort of, like, I don't know if maybe it's the culture or kind of, like, the environment was kind of wearing you down. But is that really all there is to the story?
Truthfully, I started phasing out. I noticed when I took my first solo trip. I traveled to Chicago last June, so a little over a year ago, and that completely changed my mindset. I could no longer justify spending my 20s inside a pool hall. You know, I couldn't do it. There was a whole big world out there. I started, you know, seeing so many different things I could be doing. And as soon as I got back from Chicago, I booked my next trip. And just the more that I studied different places and researched and found different things, like, that intrigued me way more than mastering a game that's pretty much unmasterable.
So that you said it changed your mindset, though. What was your mindset at the time?
At the time, I actually wanted to be a professional female pool player, because I definitely had the competitive drive. I've been a softball player for 16 years, played in college. I definitely had that competitive edge. And when softball ended, it was like this identity foreclosure. Oh my God.
Can you explain to people what that is? Who?
I used to be an athlete. I identified as an athlete, and all of a sudden it ended and I didn't know what to do with that. It was, you know, kind of, it was a struggle to figure out, you know, what other parts of me there was aside from the athlete.
Like, who am I?
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up completely putting all of that into pool, and I loved it. I loved competing with people. It's kind of funny seeing the mental aspect of the game coming from a sports psychology background. So it was, you know, it was serving its purpose. You know, it was definitely a dream I found on top of counseling. And, you know, I really sunk my teeth into it. I was holding on to it. I loved it. But then I found a different love, which was traveling.
So I think if I remember your story right, you were kind of sort of waiting, playing the waiting game to take a trip or to go on an adventure, or, you know, even just a vacation, I guess. It didn't seem like to me there was big dream or big travel thing that you were trying to do or accomplish. It's just your friends were busy and they were making you wait longer than you had patience for. And so you booked this solo trip, as you put it, to Chicago. And what were, like, right before you booked, right when you decided, you know, I'm just going to do it, like, what were you thinking?
It's funny. I remember everything crystal clear. It was a snowy day, and I was home doing counseling sessions over the phone because we all couldn't drive. And it wasn't a matter of waiting for friends. It was really just a matter of doing it. It wasn't a lingering thought either. I wasn't thinking like, where should I go? Maybe I'll think of it one day. It actually just like came to me. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a trip. I'm just going to go. I'm going to book it. I booked my flight. I booked my Airbnb, and that was it. I wasn't even thinking Chicago, truthfully. I was looking through a list of places I could go. I was just kind of scrolling through. I knew nothing about Chicago. I really didn't. The Cubs, pizza, you know, about it, you know. But I really didn't know much about it. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go there because that's the point. I don't know anything about it. So I'm going to go there to learn about it. And that's how I landed on traveling there of all places. So it's kind of random.
I mean, did you ever have this feeling? And then even now too, I'm sure this could carry us to, you know, present day. A feeling of kind of uncertainty or like kind of being uneasy. I mean, it seems like you were kind of pushing into the unknown and yeah. even really in the pool world too. I mean, you didn't know anything about it. Like you said, you relate to the game. A lot of people were in it a lot longer than you. And you just decide to go to Chicago almost, it sounds like kind of like on a whim. It just kind of came.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, pool actually taught me how to find that little bit of bravery or courage. I would walk into a pool hall, probably be the only female in the room. Everybody's staring at me.
How did that feel when in that moment? How did you feel?
Super intimidated, out of place, unsure, and very timid. You know, I was definitely feeling inferior because people were better than me. They were comfortable with each other. I didn't have friends there, but you know what? I love the game. So I remember walking into a pool hall. It was probably 2 or 3 years ago on Long Island, and there was a tournament that night. I'm like, all right, let me go check it out. It's time to be brave. Time to just try and see what Long Island has to offer. So I walked in, signed up, everyone's looking at me, and I didn't return to that pool hall for probably 5 months after that. I was that afraid. And then in the interim, I was going to different pool halls, you know, trying things out. Then I started meeting people. I joined a team and I slowly did it, essentially. And I, you know, met a lot of people along the way. But it's almost like that scary feeling is almost exhilarating at the same time. I just needed to learn that a little bit further than I did at the time.
And do you think that, so this traveling, so now Chicago was your first trip, and can you give us a timeline? When was that?
That was June 2018.
Okay, so June 2018 was your first trip. It's currently end of July, so it's basically a year ago.
Yeah.
And since then, it seems like you've gone, how many trips have you gone on since then? Where have you visited?
Since then, I've been on 8 trips. After that, I went to Iceland. That was my first international trip by myself. That was in October 2018. And then I went to Denver that December. I went to Miami in March. And the other trips I've taken were not solo. So I went on 4 solo trips and another 4 trips in the meantime.
So your solo trips just look like so much fun that now everyone wants to come aboard.
Everybody. I'm not kidding. Everybody wants to join. It's so funny. Ever since I started posting about it, they're like, oh my God, we should take a trip soon. And nobody's ever wanted to travel with me before. So, you know, I'm taking days off of work and work is very flexible. I'm very fortunate for that. So I would book a trip and then people would say, oh, do you want to go somewhere? We should go here. And I said, truthfully, like, I can't really just book trips that often. I was going almost every month or every other month. And so I started just saying, do you want to just come with me? I'm going to Dallas in April. You can come with me. And I had a friend join me for that. I had a friend join me for San Diego. So that I didn't mind, you know. I decided to move to Prague back in January. So I knew I was going to be doing something big. So the little trips I didn't mind having company for.
Because you don't want them to derail you from your awesome itinerary. plant. So, well, what do you think that is? Like, I'm kind of like flabbergasted that all of a sudden people are like climbing on board. And
you know what it is? I noticed that people are afraid to pull the trigger in terms of planning. So people are afraid to commit to where to go, the proper flight to take, you know, just really committing to travel plans. I noticed seems to be a big hesitancy. So I think that's part of it. And someone's vocalized that to me before too. They're like, I just don't know, you know, where to go, what to do, how to book it. So once I booked everything, they kind of just piggybacked off of that.
You know, it kind of reminds me, I'll share, it's a little bit of a sour story, but I had some friends that back in college, we were thinking about traveling around and across the country. And we're slowly piecing together these plans and talking about, well, maybe this time we'll work better this. And eventually they wound up going with a couple other guys. So I did not get to go across the country. But it was mostly because when reflecting back on it, they just set a plan and they said, do you want to come along? And that was it. And I think it was just the path of least resistance made it really easy to pull the trigger, like you said.
Yeah. I'm not usually type A by any means. I'm not controlling. Although when I travel by myself, there's a balance between that. You know, I don't have a whole itinerary for the entire trip. I just don't really believe in that. I go based on feel. So I have a list of things I would love to try or do. I just had a list of things. And I would say, like, you know, what do I feel like doing today? What do I, you know, of this list, what do I feel like doing right now? And I would just kind of go in that moment. I really didn't have like this whole big day of activities that's overwhelming. I got to be here by this time. And I didn't like that. So that's something I kind of rolled with in Chicago. And it kind of just taught me to really, really live presently, you know, because usually I would be a planner and I didn't want to be that for a solo trip.
Just to kind of clarify or separate out, like there's a difference between, you could probably tell me better, but I think there's a difference between planning on the trip and planning out what you're going to do versus, it sounded like a lot of the fear for people is the planning of the trip, like actually
like the logistics
going. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Like lodging and flight seem to be the biggest, you know, barriers, I guess.
And so what do you do? I think that's a pretty clear picture of you have a list of things you'd like to do. You go on feel, like, easy enough. But how do you handle the other barriers, the logistics piece?
I really didn't have like a big science to it. I really just found something that worked. Honestly, I would sometimes just look at flight prices and be like, oh, that's a really good price. I'm just going to go there for that weekend. And I would let the flight price dictate where I go. I'm not incredibly loyal to one airline. It's really just, you know, whatever works in that moment. You know, I remember one of my flights I found for like $86 round trip. I'm like, sold, I'll go there, you know? So sometimes my trips get dictated by flight prices.
I mean, that it seems like a helpful tip. I know there's all sorts of resources online that people can look for and find that help with that and help identify the cheap prices. But let's go kind of deeper in beneath the surface then, because I know some of the things that I know that you'll have some answers for are sort of like the, I guess we could call it the mental side of traveling. And especially, you know, with solo trips, I think people have a hard time going to a movie theater by themselves, let alone fly across the country to Denver, San Diego, whatever, these different places. And then to cap it all off, we're all eagerly awaiting to know what's behind your Prague trip. And last I heard that was going to be a one-way ticket. But before we get there, what are some of the, like, the fears that you have or the barriers that, you know, we talked about other people, but what have you experienced?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely an element of fear involved. I mean, I'm female, I'm young, and I'm 5'3". So there's definitely that fear, just in general, but I've grown very cautious with who I tell that I'm solo traveling. That's something I didn't learn right away. Thankfully, I haven't had any issues, but I realized I was telling people very freely. And it dawned on me that, you know, anybody can take advantage of that or follow me.
Did you watch Taken? Is that what did it?
I did not watch Taken. I refuse to watch Taken. I guess some of the fears mainly would happen at nighttime, you know, because I wanted to experience the nightlife and everything. I was very cognizant of how much I was drinking if I went to a bar that night or something. You know, I always validated that I was in an actual Uber and not just jumping in a random car, you know. So I really took every precaution I could possibly take, but there is definitely that element of fear, just of the unknown, especially when nobody else is around. So another thing I started doing was I turned on the location of my phone and shared it with people. You know, God forbid people don't hear from me. I'll never forget my first trip to Chicago. I fell asleep for a couple of hours and it was like during the day. It was an early flight. I took a nap. My parents were freaking out. They definitely thought I was dead. I felt so bad. Cause they, you know, they wouldn't have known what to do. So yeah, turning on my location definitely helps combat some of those fears and, you know, just being cautious with everything.
Well, I think what sticks out to me is that, you know, as a guy, and I've talked about this with my girlfriend and other friends who are female, and it's something that a lot of times just goes completely unnoticed. We as males just don't even think about these sorts of things. And it's not just with traveling. I mean, I think I would say I'd be a little bit more cautious traveling with who I'm with, where I'm at, who I'm around. But it sounds like these are sort of the sort of thoughts and I guess fears that even just going out, if you know, it could be a college student going out at night to a bar. You know, their hometown. It makes no difference, really.
Yeah, I might take it a step too far, but even on first dates, sometimes I'll take my drink to the bathroom. Like I'll never leave my drink unattended, even if I'm on a date, you know, and it seems like it's going well, I'll still take that extra step. Thankfully, I've never had anything happen. And I like to think it's because I take these precautions, but it's really hard to say. There was one instance too in Chicago that really could have gone either way. And I really trusted my gut, because I like to think I read people pretty well. I was at this burger place that I went out of my way for, and I had to walk from the subway to the burger place, which was, you know, it was a little bit of a walk. I ended up walking through a homeless population, and it was a whole strip, and I was so nervous. I was in a sundress, you know, and it was dinner time. So the sun was still up, but not for long. So I ended up meeting this older gentleman as I was at the burger place. We chatted the entire time. He was so blown away at my story that I was traveling solo. And I went to the bathroom to wash my hands. I came out. He paid for my meal. Thought that was so sweet of him. Then he offered, he said, I'm not trying to scare you, but do you need me to drive you anywhere? My first reaction was like, oh, no, I'm good. Thank you. You know, I wouldn't get in a car. But then I was thinking it was nighttime. I had to walk through the homeless population again. So I really had to weigh my options. This man was so gentle and I heard his story. I could see it in his eyes. I ended up taking the ride with him and everything was fine. He played classical music in the car. He made sure I arrived safely. You know, he really, really was like such a sweet man. And I'm very grateful for him because I really don't know if I would have made it safely to the subway. I don't know. So that was a judgment call. And, you know, telling that story, people think I'm nuts for getting in a car with somebody. But you really do have to just trust your gut sometimes, too. Not all people are bad.
Yeah, I love that lesson. Not all people are bad. I think that we could definitely go down a rabbit hole here. But I think in a nutshell, there's something to say about being in the moment and really paying attention to it versus just having a preconceived idea of what someone might be like, whether good or bad, either it could go either way. And I think either way could get you in trouble.
Yeah.
But I want to kind of like pivot a little bit.
Yep.
Because we're talking about a lot about traveling, obviously. I know it's a big part of your story, but you have a full-time job as a mental health counselor. You have obviously passion and hobby with pool, and we've talked about that a little bit. You have this one-way ticket to Prague, and you also recently met someone who you've been dating. And in transparency, we were talking before we got on this episode, and I have yet to ask Tara the question of what is going to happen with this one this pending decision. Yeah. But I'm really curious if there's some sort of underlying story or maybe even a lesson that you've learned from, like, when it comes to traveling. You had this big dream, this big picture with pool, and then you said that your first solo trip, it changed your mindset. And we talked about what your mindset was, but not what it is today. And I'm wondering, what is that? What's made travel so appealing to you that it just completely derailed?
Yeah, derailed is a very good word.
Yeah.
I think that I've never really been the type to have one big dream. I really haven't. I've just always done what I was supposed to do. I mean, in terms of school, getting a job, you know, just following the path, you know. And when I started traveling, I kind of fell into this mentality that it doesn't have to be the typical story to go to school, find a job, get engaged, get married, have children, buy a house, not in that order, but, you know, you know, just kind of living that classic story.
Right, right. The American dream, right. Picket fence, whatever it is.
Right. I kind of started shifting into thinking it's okay if I don't find somebody, or get married, have children, because I always wanted that. And it kind of added this stress and pressure to meet somebody and, you know, kind of follow that guideline of, you know, of the way to live. And when I started traveling, it really opened my eyes into the fact that I really can do whatever I want. The necklace I wear, I got it engraved. It says, actually, I can. I wear it every single day. And it just really stands out to me, because if people were to say, you know, why are you moving? Why are you doing this? And it's just like, well, because I can, you know. And it kind of has a negative connotation to it if I say it like that, but, you know, because I can. But I don't know. It kind of just helped me get out of my own way a little bit of thinking that things have to be a certain way when they really don't. So it changed my mentality, in the sense that I don't have to live the same life that I've been accustomed to seeing around me. And, you know, if it leads me around the world and to different jobs and meeting different people, then that's what it'll be then.
Hearing you say that, it brings up this almost kind of like uneasy feeling. And I wonder if other people would feel this too, hearing you say that. That's in particular, specifically, that you had this kind of preconceived idea that, you know, whether it's your environment, your parents, your school, whatever, it's this idea of the way life is supposed to go. And you had this realization that you could just strip that away.
Absolutely.
The uneasy feeling comes from, you didn't replace it with anything. It doesn't seem like you had this like, oh, it's supposed to be this way. Instead, it's like you just pulled it away and it's just free. It's free.
Yeah. I have the educational background that I can fall back on if need be. I have, you know, food service industry experience, you know, bartending, serving. I'm always willing and able to learn more or learn anything. I just recently got a certification to teach English internationally, which is what I will be doing in Prague. And, you know, wherever it leads me, I'm okay with. I've set myself up to where if I need to come home, I'll come home and I'll start again. You know, I'll do what I need to do to get back going. And my job is wonderful and they're letting me continue counseling abroad. I'll be doing phone sessions and FaceTime, Skype, whatever everybody wants to do. So I'll have my job if I decide to come back. I'll have it while I'm there. So that's been a nice cushion too. But yeah, that unknown, I used to be really afraid of. I used to be afraid of not knowing what to expect, not knowing how to prepare or plan. And I kind of just put my hands up when I started traveling. I'm just like, okay, wherever it leads me, I'm okay with. And I'll adjust. It's almost like trusting yourself to, or trusting myself to adapt and transition wherever I need to. So it's trusting myself and having the confidence to be able to adapt to.
It's exactly what I was hearing before you used those words, is that the trusting yourself. It seems like your ability, your faith in your ability, or trust in your ability to learn and adapt, seems like that's where it makes you, like, you will always feel comfortable or confident wherever you go. You'll carry that with you.
It's definitely a driving force. I'm not naive to the fact that there will be a period of, you know, transition, and I'm sure I'll struggle and cry at some point that, you know, it's all so new and I don't know what to do. And I'm 100% expecting to feel that, but it's making it through that I'm really holding on to. Like, I can't wait for the day, you know, maybe it's 4 months in, maybe it's 2 months in after I go through that, where I'm like, okay, I think I got this, you know?
Yeah, where the roller coaster ride starts to level out. And speaking of, I think you hinted at it, but before, and I've been dying to ask you this question. Mm-hmm. you have the one-way ticket. Mm-hmm. And you started dating someone, and now you're left at a crossroads. You have a decision to make. Can you walk us through that?
Yes. So it's very ironic. I started working at a restaurant on the weekends just to save up a little bit more for the trip. And it just so happened that while at the restaurant, I met this man. And he completely threw me off guard. I was not prepared. I actually posted on social media, I have one rule this summer, and it's to not fall in love. A month later, I remember reposting, I had one rule. And, you know, I really, really care deeply for him. He really is a wonderful man. And I was at a crossroads for a couple of days. I was about to sell my car. I started telling all my clients. And I really needed to decide, because if I wasn't going to sell my car, and if I really wasn't going to go, I needed to decide then. Ultimately, after weighing out the pros and cons and the different perspectives, I am going to still move to Prague, because although he's a great man and I don't doubt we can work and have a future together, I would always resent myself, and I'd be really mad at myself if I didn't go after all this planning. I've been looking forward to it. It's turned into one of my dreams, and I really can't give that up for a big question mark. It's too new to change all these plans. Also, it would put a lot of pressure on him, I think. Like, wow, she didn't go to Prague to stay with me. I better step up. I don't want him thinking that he has to be anything than what he is right now. And on the same token, I feel like even if we had a little bicker, or if we had a fight at any point, I don't want to think in my head, I could have been in Prague. I stayed home.
It comes up. Yeah.
I would never say that out loud, but I wouldn't even want to think it. So I'm kind of putting my hands up and leaving it to fate on this one. The whole reason I'm going to Prague is because I didn't have any ties here. Don't have kids, pets, you know, I really don't have any ties. And part of me doesn't want to leave with ties either. So I told myself I would give it a year in Prague and reevaluate after that. You know, if I end up staying, that's great. If I end up moving to a different country, that's great. Or I might come home. Mm-hmm. And it's so cliche, but if it really is meant to be, and then we will find our way back to each other. And if not, you know what? I've loved before. I probably will love again. I'm just not willing to give up that openness to new experiences and the world for too much of a question mark right now.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And yet it's also almost kind of counterintuitive, because there's a lot of people, I'll just say that, you know, the venture lifers, the people who are entrepreneurs and freelancers and travelers and all of that crowd. I think a lot of people on the outside who look at us, if I could say, they might think, oh man, you must be like, you have no qualms about diving into the unknown and taking these big leaps. But actually, you know, if you really listen carefully, you're kind of risk averse. Like you're very cautious about traveling. You really thought through this decision of you know, managing a relationship and I guess, and a potential relationship, long distance one that is, being overseas. And I think it goes to show that there's kind of this like blend or balance of having the courage to push forward into something you might feel uneasy about, but then also doing it in a smart way or being strategic about it.
Mm-hmm. I really don't want to hurt myself, hurt him. He's known from the get-go what my plans are. And he even said to me, he didn't ask me to stay. He said, if it'll make you happy to go, I want you to go. And that really meant a lot. You know, it's a bigger deal to me than, you know, living a life I've known. I'd rather go to the unknown wherever it may lead. And, you know, maybe I'll look back and wonder, but I know I won't look back and regret. The whole thing I really held on to when I came to this decision, even just to move, was when I'm 80 years old, looking back on my life, what am I going to wish I did at this time right now? And the fact that I'm 27, not married, no ties, this is exactly what I want to do. I woke up one morning in January and it was so clear to me. I've never had a thought or an idea or a vision so clear as I did back in January that this is what I want to do.
I'm getting goosebumps hearing you say that. There's so many things that you just said that resonate with me. And clearly, being the host of this podcast, but for time's sake, there's one thing that you said I want to bring up, and I forget where you wrote it, but I remember reading it. And you said that you owe it to yourself to give your life your absolute best. And I think that kind of ties into how you just said, you know, you don't want to live a life that you've known, which kind of just sounds like mundane and bland and boring to me personally, but you know, to each their own. But when you saying that and writing that sentence, you know, you owe it to yourself to give your life your absolute best. What made you write that sentence? What made you say that?
I know how I've been in relationships in the past. I am that girlfriend who will, you know, really do anything. You know, I'll cook dinner, make plans, I'll go out of my way to surprise him. You know, I'll really go above and beyond in relationships. When my last relationship, like almost 3 years ago, ended, I thought to myself, why don't I treat myself the way I treat my significant other? I really do a lot when I'm in a relationship. It makes me happy though. I like to do those things, but I realized how much I was, for lack of a better word, neglecting myself. You know, probably wasn't neglect. I don't mean in that way. I really did have self-care, but to go above and beyond, you know, to really treat myself and, you know, give myself, you know, the chance to find that ultimate happiness, but on my own, you know, I'm a firm believer, you know, you're born into this world on your own. You're going to leave it on your own. You better really make sure you're doing everything you want to do in that time that you like.
It's like inspiring. And also like, I think some people are probably shaking their heads like, nope. I don't, it like, doesn't fit with me. I'm a self-proclaimed people person. And there's a part of it that just is like, oh no, that doesn't feel good. But at the same time, I think you're right to say that, like, you really, like you said, you're born into it alone, you leave it alone, and it make the most out of it. I think especially when you adopt that mindset of looking back at your life when you're 80, or maybe it'll be, you know, 100 or 110 with technology and medicine these days. But I think that really paints a clear picture of kind of like the way you look at life and what your perspectives and values are. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, just if we could touch on this briefly, have you ever given like a lot of attention or thought to specifically those kinds of questions of what your values are and how you want to live your life? Because so far it sounds like it's just kind of been over time through experience, these little lessons you've learned.
I've definitely learned a lot from people. I like soaking in experiences and perspectives. I love the international friends that I've made over the last year or so. I guess ultimately, I really just want to learn more. I think I want to learn more about people, more about different cultures, and just having experiences that I can look back on that, you know, make me really feel like I've lived. There's nothing wrong with my life as is right now. I'm sure I could make, you know, a very happy life and continue down this path. But it's not thriving to me. I'm not fulfilled. That was the word I used in the beginning. You know, I'm happy, but I'm not fulfilled. I've always felt like there's more out there and there's more I could be doing. So in terms of values, I think I just value experience and adventure. For right now, at least. I'm sure I'll value stability in 10 years.
Yeah, they definitely can change. And I think that that's very fitting for this podcast, though. One of the things that I often say is to live your life like a story worth sharing. And it seems like you're doing that. And speaking of, I talked about your writing a little bit. I know you said you have kind of thought-provoking posts on social media, but then also you had a blog and you're writing a book, and I think you're, not that you have a title worked out or anything, but I know that your blog is called Late Night Thoughts with, mm-hmm. with Tara.
Yep.
LateNightThoughtsWithTara.com. And then you also, I think, had written it's fusing philosophy, psychology, and reality, right?
Exactly.
So can you tell us, based off of that, what your this book that you're writing is about?
It's actually taking the blog, a different, you know, a different viewpoint, I suppose, but sort of the same feel. And I've just transformed it into a book. It will be called Late Night Thoughts. It's kind of the same idea. And it's really just my perspective on how being a therapist and how being a traveler or even just, you know, a member of society has made me look at things. The chapters aren't incredibly long. They're about a page, maybe a page and a half. And it's really just meant to make people think. You know, I like the idea of thinking just a little bit deeper into emotions, especially why you feel the way you do sometimes, and the difference between anger, sadness, and fear. You know, they're very closely related. And just kind of giving people something that they can kind of delve into a little bit further, just in terms of understanding themselves better.
Well, I'm definitely first in line to get a copy of that book. Do you have a timeline at all at this point?
So I'm 14 chapters in right now. It's really just a matter of when I want to cut it off. It's kind of like these thoughts come to me and then I take it and run with it. And I end up, you know, creating a chapter that, you know, means a lot. So I think I've put the book on hold, truthfully, and the blog, because I want to get to Prague. I want to really uncover some of the different perspectives I have when I'm there. So everything's been put on hold until I get there. I'm hoping the book can be done by Christmas this year and hopefully published, you know, within a year or two or however the timeline works out. But I anticipate writing a lot more when I get there. I just think I'm looking for a different type of inspiration right now.
It's interesting listening to you say that, because I think for a lot of people, you could have kind of like a sort of tinge of guilt almost, or sort of like a frustration of like having to put a project on pause. And not saying that you haven't felt those, but it also, just hearing the way you talk about it, it seems like it's not real. It's a non-issue, because you have your... Yeah. Living your values of adventure and getting to Prague, that's the top priority.
Yeah. I did feel guilty for a little bit, because I truthfully haven't written in the blog or the book maybe since March or April. But, you know, the way my schedule was, my preparations to move, I knew that things needed my attention, and the blog and the book were the last things I wanted to force. I never want those thoughts to feel like they're not organic, or they're not, you know, given the proper care that they deserve. So I'm completely fine putting that on hold. You know, it's meant to be a hobby, and I can't force a hobby if it's not my top priority.
That makes a lot of sense. I definitely am a huge fan of your writing, though, and looking forward to whenever that does come out. No pressure. For time's sake, Tara, I think we're coming to the end of the interview. I have some rapid fire questions for you, and then we'll cap things off at the end. But the first question, I don't think we touched on this. Hopefully you can keep it short, though, why Prague?
I get that question quite a bit. First of all, I love that it's centrally located in Europe. There's a lot going on around it. There's Germany, Poland, Austria, Slovakia that surround it. There's a lower cost of living there than other European cities. So that kind of just made sense to me. It's off the beaten path. People don't normally think Prague right away when they think of Europe. It's very classic and timeless because it was untouched during World War II. So it has this old time charm to it. And there's a high demand for English teachers, which is what I'll be doing.
That all falls into place. That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Switch gears a little bit. Who do you look up to the most?
Wow, that kind of threw me off a little bit. You know, my parents have always been the ones steering me in terms of morals and values and just being a good person. I definitely look up to them, but I'm also loving this sense of exploration that I have. And I think that comes from my brother. He's the one that traveled by himself for the first time. He's the one that went to Ireland and he found his now wife. Not what I'm looking for when I go, but you know, that just kind of fell into place. But I definitely look up to him too. It's a family.
Well, that's it. That's exciting. It's like a extended member of the Venture Life community now. bringing you back to travel, what is your favorite place that you visited? Always have to ask the travelers on the podcast.
I loved Iceland, but my favorite trip was probably Denver. There's something about Rocky Mountain National Park that that's really hard to explain. I was just there. It was quiet. It was in December. And it was just feeling insignificant is probably one of my favorite feelings, which is very ironic, but, I love feeling small. I love being next to something way bigger than myself. And I love feeling like there's so much more out there. That's probably one of my favorite things. So with that said, I'm sure Iceland is a very, very close second.
Those definitely are two places I'll have to add to my list. Or move higher on my list. I think they were already there. last rapid fire question. What's one thing that most people don't already know about you?
Most people probably don't know that it took a long time for me to feel comfortable in my own skin. I've always kind of been shy, kept to myself. Well, I shouldn't say shy, but I kept to myself a lot in high school. I was involved in a ton of things, softball, track, orchestra, choir. You know, I was always involved, but I don't think I really developed my voice until maybe even grad school. You know, there was a lot of times I just was in the background. I really didn't speak too much. I kind of let everybody just do their thing, especially in groups. And, you know, it took a lot for me to really figure out who I was. And I attribute that partly to pool, but mostly to traveling too.
That's awesome. Well, I have two final questions for you that I ask every guest. But before I ask those, I want to take a moment to say thank you for coming onto the show and to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing. I know it probably doesn't feel like work, but I think that the way that you are styling your life or living your life is really just an inspiration for people. And I think that is evident in the amount of attention you've gotten from people who want to come on your trips all of a sudden. But doing what you're supposed to be doing and following, you know, living your true life and being true to yourself. I think everything that you're doing is awesome. So I just want to say thanks for doing that and showing people they can do that.
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, of course. The final two questions. The first is, to keep it short, how do you define success for yourself?
So I thought a lot about this. I think that success can really come from within. It doesn't have to be something measurable. Sometimes or oftentimes I feel that people measure success by something monetary or something that they can show for it. But I think success kind of comes from within. If you feel that you've done something to its completion and you feel good about it, then it was successful. You know, it's tough to measure something that's really meant to be a feeling. So I would define success personally as feeling complete about something or feeling happiness towards something.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard it put that way before. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. The final question I have is where, if people want to follow along, they want to read your writing, they want to see what you're up to, where you are, where can they connect? Where can they do that?
So anybody is welcome to follow me on Instagram. It's my first and last name, Tara Danino. And you're also welcome to follow me on Facebook. I will be posting a lot of my Prague adventures coming up. And then my blog is latenightthoughtswithtara.com. So I'm sure there'll be quite a few posts coming out in September and October.
Yeah, I think you might have to add some images to those posts too, so yes. People could see.
Yep, absolutely. I'm definitely going to transform it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tara, that is the end of our episode. Again, I appreciate you coming on, and good luck with the travel. I think when people listen to this, you'll probably already be there. But
yeah. Thank you very much.
It'd be cool to visit Prague. I haven't been there myself. Hopefully. Maybe even by the time you're listening to this, I'll have visited, but chances are probably not. But I want to ask you, like, would you live life that way? I think Tara's story is one of those that people might look at on Instagram and feel jealous or envious until you actually hear about the tough and sometimes like scary decisions that you have to make in order to live that life. You know, but what's really awesome is how genuine and aligned Tara is in living life the way that she wants to live. So my question to you is, are you living your life the way you want? If you feel like sharing your answer with me, shoot me a DM or just leave a comment on Tara's episode preview on Instagram or Facebook at The Venture Life. And as always, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for our next episode on The Venture Life podcast.